Hello and welcome to the Journalism.co.uk podcast, a show where we bring you insights from media industry experts to help journalists do their jobs better. I'm your host, Jacob Granger. Today, we'll be learning from two of the best in the business about how to change the fortunes of your newsroom, quite literally. Alex Wood-Morton, Fortune's Executive Editor of Europe, shares with us a back-to-basics approach on breaking into international markets to find a new paying audience, something the US publication is doing here in the UK. Meanwhile, Martina Andretta, Head of Growth for Metro UK, reveals how a new take on training has increased page views and advertising revenue. Now, if you're feeling stuck in a rut when it comes to generating new revenue for your newsroom, stay tuned for universal lessons on how to reignite that fire. However, one thing we know you love is access to experts actually doing the job. So you can meet with both Alex and Martina, plus other experts, on our first ever study tour happening on the 26th of November, 2024 in London. Here, we will be visiting four top publishers: The Economist, The Financial Times, Fortune and Metro UK, where you'll get inside and exclusive access to their newsroom to learn how all the magic happens. And yes, we'll all hit the pub at the end of the day. Head to newsrewired.com if you're interested, and stay tuned for a sneak peek into what's to come. Let's start with Fortune, which has been earning a fortune through expanding its brand into new markets. The news publisher earned more than $100 million in revenue last year, a third of which came from digital advertising and subscription revenue. A big play for Fortune, as a highly recognisable US publication, has been breaking into European markets, particularly the UK. Now, that's not so straightforward when audiences have a particular perception of your news brand. Leading that strategy is Alex Wood-Morton, Executive Editor for Europe.
I'm the executive editor for Fortune magazine in Europe. I'm essentially responsible for all the content, both in print, digital, and also events across the continent. Fairly new in the role as well. I only started in mid-February, but I am incredibly privileged and excited to be somewhere that is growing.
Yeah. You told me before that you're in charge of spending the money, not so much making it. Is that true?
Well, I mean, you know, every editor these days has to have some kind of commercial hat on them, and I'm very much an entrepreneur by background. Some people may know that prior to this, I worked for Forbes magazine and ended up at Forbes because I sold my own magazine to Forbes. So I'm unusual in the sense of being an editor with that business background. But fundamentally, my responsibility is around growing the audience. We have an amazing commercial team, and my commercial director is a great partner to me, and we're very aligned in what we're trying to do. But my focus is on editorial.
Right. And it was Memo, no, that you sold to Forbes?
Correct. Yes. Sold the Memo to Forbes in 2018. Feels like a long time ago now. Actually, it makes me feel old. But yes, one of the best things actually about this role is my news editor, Oliver Smith, was actually employee number one at the Memo. So we've kind of come full circle, and it's great to have someone back in the family.
Righto. And what do you spend the company's money on?
Well, producing amazing content, first and foremost. I think I've come into a really interesting opportunity, really, because Fortune is a very established brand, particularly in the US. Almost everyone you speak to here, when you say Fortune, they think Fortune 500, they think about the world's biggest companies. But really, we're here to grow and to really carve a space out in this market. And so a lot of my strategy has been about investing in the best possible content. The print magazine, kind of counterintuitively, we have invested into. And we have built a roster of great writers across Europe, because one thing that's really important to me is trying to get out of that kind of London media bubble centric mindset. And so I've really tactically tried to find writers that are based in Rome, in Stockholm, in Berlin, all the different key cities across Europe, so that we can be as pan-European as possible.
Righto. So print's not dead, and there's still very much a premium on good quality journalism, I'm hearing across the lines there.
I believe more than ever. I think we are in a world where we are drowning in content. Not all of it is great. A lot of it could be better. And I think people, especially after the pandemic, you know, we saw audiences really skyrocket during the pandemic, but we also saw that divergence where a lot of people actually pushed back into quality media. And I think that's where the opportunity is.
Right, so, and you said there about growing. I mean, you're calling me now from a WeWorks, and I understand it's Well, it's been a chain of different WeWorks that you've had to work in recent times.
Yeah, so we're based out of a WeWork in Bank in the heart of the financial city in London. And one kind of, I know people like to say that we're hyper fast growing. It's kind of a cliche you hear in the business world. But in our case, we really are, because in the last 15 months, I think we've moved 5 times. And we've moved within the same building, but to larger and larger units because we've run out of seats. I mean, just to give you a sense of that scale, just over a year, maybe 15 months ago, we were maybe around 9 or 10 people. We're now closer to 30 people. It's been, you know, a very rapid growth story, and one that I think is really going against the grain of across the rest of the media.
Right. Business really booming then. How come?
When Fortune decided to reinvest in Europe, I think we had a lot of conversations, and particularly from my side editorially, I was saying this to your colleague Marcella back when I joined the company, that I've been in this business a long time, and I think that there's a real issue with the business media, particularly in the UK, that we do love to kick people down. We do like to do a hit job. And actually, while I'm not here to be doing puff pieces for anyone, I think there really is a space in the market for someone to actually champion business, and basically champion business that does business well. Like my editor-in-chief, Alison Chantal in New York, I really admire her strategy, and her kind of tagline internally is about making business better, and sort of saying this is a good example of a business that is doing it right, and here's how you can learn from it. And I think that that kind of that narrative is something that's really lacking in the market.
So I guess the key strategic puzzle for you right now as an American brand is breaking very much into European markets like the UK. That's the key thing that you've been grappling with of late.
Yeah, it's the UK within the piece of Europe is definitely a strategic priority for us. But also just capturing the kind of nomadic types of people who are working across multiple cities, doing different things. And I think readers here in Europe are very sophisticated. It's not enough just to read about Elon Musk every single day. You know, they want to hear about the businesses that are here. People often underestimate just the scale of a lot of European businesses. You know, LVMH Group in France, you know, one of the world's largest luxury groups. A lot of the businesses in Europe are legacy old companies, but they are hugely influential.
Mm. So what's the challenge associated to breaking into an established market like the UK?
I think first and foremost, it's about building trust. Something that's quite unique to Fortune and I'm really enjoying is we have that Fortune 500 list. We just launched the second edition a couple of weeks ago. And really, when people start to understand the mechanics behind that, it is one of those few business lists that's actually built on solid data and methodology. So we have a research and lists team within our team in London. They have economics backgrounds. One of them is an economist. I mean, how amazing is it to have an actual economist in your newsroom, you know, really breaking down these macro trends, but also ranking companies truly by their figures. It's not, you know, these are the coolest companies to work for, dot, dot, dot. It's actually, these are Europe's biggest companies by revenue. And I think once we do lists like that and people see that we're doing something really tangible and something valuable, and the trust really builds from that. And I, with my reporting team, who've been incredible, I've really got them to focus on relationships as well. I started my journalistic career in Japan, in a Japanese newspaper.
Did you really? Wow, I didn't know that.
I did. Yeah, so I was 21 in a Japanese newspaper out in Osaka in Japan. And I learned a lot, and I think it really like influenced the way I think as an editor and a journalist, that as you can probably imagine in Japan, it is very relationships focused. And I've carried that throughout my career, and I really encourage my reporters to, you know, it's not a transactional, like I'm asking you questions, I'm going to get something back and that's it. It's build a relationship with this person, find out where they go on holiday, find out what makes them tick, who else are they friends with, really insert yourself as part of that business community, because that's when you get the really interesting stories.
Wow. That's really fascinating. Was it an English-speaking Japanese title?
Was it? No, it was a Japanese title called the Sankei Shimbun. So I believe I'm one of the few, or at least one of the first non-Japanese people to be trained in the Japanese newspaper. And tell you a funny thing about it. To this day, I'm still known in the Japanese media as Long Legs. that was my... That was my nickname, because you can kind of picture in a lot of the press conferences, I was the slightly taller one in the room.
Wowee. Are you particularly tall?
I wouldn't say so. I'm about 5'11", but, you know, everything's relative.
Right. Average maybe here in the UK, but yeah. Well, that is a little known fact.
Yes.
Exclusive here on our podcast. Amazing. So how is the penetration into the sort of European market going for Fortune? How's it all going right now?
So it's been a really interesting journey. I've taken a really data-driven approach, looking at how things are performing week on week, and really encourage the reporter to take ownership of that and understand that not everything has to be gangbusters traffic, but it needs to be tactical. It needs to be, as I say, building that relationship. So the first time you cover this company, maybe people, it won't do hugely well because people don't know to come to us.
Right.
Yeah. But I've seen that kind of bear fruit and actually become really a tangible benefit. Kind of headline things I can share with you, since coming into the organization, we have tripled the number of page views that we're producing out of Europe in the best part of, what are we now, 9 months. Which I think is absolutely amazing. And it's really testament to the work the team have been doing. And so it's really showing us that when we're looking at the signals that people are interested in something, we're doing more of it and we're building upon it and building that relationship, building that trust. And it then translates into audience growth.
Right. And how does that translate into supporting the business model?
So through the partnership with our commercial director, really on the first basis, it's about building that kind of foundation of audience that then makes it monetizable. But also we are looking at building communities as well. We just had our first CEO forum in London last month. That's a really unusual model for an event. So it is a closed door event, Chatham House rule, and it only has Fortune 500 CEOs in the room. And what we're trying to create with that is, you imagine 40 people around a boardroom table having very frank and honest and open conversations. We don't even report on those conversations as journalists. It's about trying to create that safe space to bring the leaders of some of the world's biggest businesses into one room. And you can imagine from a commercial perspective, that is a very monetizable thing as well.
Oh, to be a fly on the wall, that would be awesome.
Yes.
Okay. One key thing you've learned so far in breaking into an established market, what would it be?
That's a really good question. I think that the key thing that I've learned is actually going back to basics. Like I said earlier on, that you know, you can have every technical bell and whistle, you can do some cool data viz, you know, all these things that I love to do on the digital side. People love the kind of core foundations of what journalism is. So, you know, this is not rocket science, but for example, in the print magazine, we have a separate edition for Europe. And one of the first things I added in was photography features of our events. Because who doesn't love seeing a photograph of themselves in print? I know print might seem, you know, old-fashioned and eccentric, but actually, you know, it makes them into lifelong, tangible assets. And I think just really thinking about those things and thinking about what matters to people and how they can feel valuable, how they can feel seen. And I think it's maybe surprised some of my younger members of staff, because I'm known for being very tech first, but actually, I like to go down to those basics and really think about, you know, the human aspects of what is the point of media and actually how can we add value to people's lives?
Yeah, it reminds me of the days of buying the local newspaper just to see your school pictures in it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, what do you think people will gain by visiting you in your newsroom on our study tour?
I think coming to Fortune's offices in London will be a really valuable opportunity for people to see truly what an agile startup newsroom looks like and how it works and how it operates. Because we have in many ways rewritten the rule book. You know, the way the office is laid out is very different. We sit very close to the list and research team. The sales team are in the same room as us. They are to one side of us. But it is truly collaborative, and you get a sense from all of us that anything is possible and we can support each other. We can do different initiatives. For example, when I joined the organization, we didn't really have a sort of clear process or flow for managing the pipeline of stories. And I use a very startup-y tool that I know from my memo days and I still use and I still adore. And then people are like, you can see the kind of light bulbs going like, oh, this is actually like much smarter than just keeping a document.
What's it called?
I'm obsessed with Asana. Anyone that has worked with me will know I worship at the Church of Asana. it's one of those tools that's like brilliantly simple, but also can do really clever stuff. And I think when people start to see, and if I can give you kind of a tangible example of where it's quite clever. So we have an Asana project for the editorial pipeline of stories that are coming day to day. It automatically reorders itself every night based on the date of when something's going to publish. And then whenever we mark something as scheduled or published, it automatically sends a message on Slack to everyone in the US that needs to know to let them know a story is happening so we don't have to give them a heads up. It's little things like that that, you know, once you build that process, just saves everyone time. You know, no one ever has to ask like, oh, when is that story happening? Or when's that being published? Or who's writing that? All of those things are kind of in a neat little system.
Yeah, a great example of an interdisciplinary newsroom speaking to each other, right? And that dialogue flowing, you know, avoiding pitfalls and all those things we're probably used to.
And maybe one more example of it, and I think it kind of speaks to the, you know, the collaboration across the business side as well. In our sort of planning for next year, we used Asana and properly looked at every single month, you know, had face-to-face meetings, but we essentially made like a board of January, February, March, April, May. And then we looked at like what events were happening in Europe. So you've got Cannes Lions in June, you've got VivaTech, you've all these different kind of key moments in the year. And as a team, we then were like, okay, well, maybe we should focus the print magazine on that. Maybe we should do an event then. And it just made it so much easier to be able to look at a lot of information and then start to kind of synchronize everything. So I think that I think would be maybe interesting for people to come to a newsroom that's really thinking holistically like that.
Love it. Well, we can't wait to visit you. And thanks so much for chatting to me and looking forward to the study tour later on this month, Alex.
Thank you.
So it's worth reiterating that advice from Alex once more. Purpose before profit. Concentrate on what matters to your audience and the money will soon follow. Now we head over to Metro UK, which has been using focus weeks to retrain the newsroom and realign strategies across many news desks. Leading that work is Head of Growth Martina Andretta, who says that consistency is key if you want to achieve page view growth across your titles. But that means you need to make space for one-to-ones.
So I am Metro's Head of Growth. I like to say that I am the bridge between the editorial team and the audience team. Me and the rest of my team, the growth editors, we really work across editorial projects, but try to sort of unify the plan for everyone, which is a role that's often sort of overlooked in newsrooms, but we try to make it a key part of our strategy this year.
Not to ask a stupid question right now, but why does audience growth matter? Why is this an area of concern to the Metro?
So our business model is scale. So page views are still the most important metric for us at the moment. That means reaching more people and reaching the right audiences. You know, people that are interested in the kind of coverage that we do in the areas of focus. So audience growth does exactly that. We identify where does that audience live, what are they interested in, what are current readers interested in, and making sure that we can build something that is sustainable long term as well. We don't want just to chase clicks. We want people to actually engage with the brand and feel that we are a brand that they can keep coming back to and interact with.
Yeah. Is audience growth a tricky business right now? Are you finding that? Is it hard?
Yeah, very hard. I don't think it's a surprise to anyone, you know, to hear that platforms are particularly tricky to work with at the moment. Nobody seems to want newsrooms anywhere. So direct traffic is something that we look at very closely, and really important to be flexible and to keep changing the strategy based on what the latest news are.
Well, okay. Well, I'm all ears. Tell us how you're going about this challenge right now. What are some of the audience growth strategies that the Metro has been looking at in recent times?
Yeah, so it all started about a year ago, actually, where, you know, everybody was struggling even more with the loss of Facebook and Twitter referral traffic. We realized that, you know, the audience team itself in Metro wasn't very, it was disjointed. We weren't very united, weren't communicating well. So we sat down and we said, what are we going to do about this? What's the plan? I don't think we were using data as effectively as we are nowadays. And that's when I came into play, because I joined in January. And together with Sophia, who is the audience growth director at Metro, the plan was to create this new team, which we called the growth team, which also sits in audience, but sort of links everyone together and makes sure that everyone is on the same page. And we developed a model which we called Focus Weeks, where we sit with every department, a Metro editorial department. We call them desks internally. So that would be, you know, news, entertainment, soaps, sports, so on and so forth. And we work with them for a limited period of time, depending on their size, because teams are all very different. And we work with them on training, mentoring, data analysis. We basically give them any trainer they think they would need and then they haven't had so far. And also what we are able to achieve at the end of these weeks with every single desk is that everybody is on the same page. Everybody has had the same training. So from now on, we can just work, assuming that everybody has the same knowledge, which is something that we struggled to do before, because there wasn't a unified training program.
Yeah, I'm with you. So it's dedicated one-to-one times with different news desks. I'm guessing the value of that is that if you don't have that one-to-one time to align your strategies, it's hard to achieve consistent growth because everyone's working in different ways and there's sort of ad hoc methods that aren't, you know, adhering to a consistent strategy across the board. That's the value in doing this, right?
Yes, and also everyone in the editorial department has different expertise, right? Some people come exclusively from somewhere that was a print publication, for example, and they are great experts in the subject matter area, but maybe they didn't get any proper audience training, which is absolutely understandable. And it would be a mistake to just assume and, you know, sort of require for someone to know that without actually providing any of that information. Some people had a video background, even though maybe they worked on the website. So, you know, it's just making sure that everybody had the same level of knowledge, mm-hmm. And everybody knew what we were working towards. It took quite a while because, you know, we did a one-to-one with all the editors, but we also tried to do as many of the sessions individually with reporters and senior reporters. So it's a lot of people.
But
I think the value is in that, in taking the time to meet everyone.
And the fruits of your labour, how's it all going? What's some of the results from implementing these focus weeks?
Yeah, so we'll go in through the results in detail during the study tour, but I can tell you that on average, we've seen a 7% increase for each desk. We work with 9 of them. Some of them had much higher percentages than that. I think the highest was 20%. So it's really good. And what we've noticed as well is then this growth continued rather than, you know, being just a one-off during those weeks where we work together, but it's a sustainable growth, which is also what we want to aim for.
And what's one key lesson that you've learned so far in implementing these focus weeks?
I think that as much as possible, we should never cut corners. So it goes back to what I was just saying about, you know, taking that time, sitting down with people one-on-one, doing as much, you know, quality extended training and conversation with everyone as you can. And I know that is a huge matter of resources. Newsrooms are often stretched in that sense, but the returns are so much higher. Because what we did then after Focus Weeks and what we're doing now is we're carrying on with some reporters that work in key areas that we want to expand in. And we continue the same work we've been doing, but just for longer periods of time. And then we have more data about their work in the area specifically. And we see that that continues to grow. And some of these reporters, and you know, what they said to ourselves, they were missing that mentorship and that coaching that, and now they have a much clearer vision of what they're trying to do, both in terms of the subject matter and how to get there.
Perfect. And what do you think our delegates will gain from attending the study tour and visiting you at the Metro?
So we'll go into everything I discussed in much more detail. I will give you the plan that we used for every single one of these initiatives. We can look at more data. We can speak a bit more freely about our case studies, as well as the next steps on what we're doing now.
Yeah, and it's suited towards news publishers who are still going for scale, still working with sort of advertising models. That's really who this is best suited for.
Yes, but I think there's something for everyone. Yes, we are a scale business and our target is page views, but a lot of what we'll cover, it's also applicable to outlets that have a registration wall or subscription wall. You know, the process of really asking what is our USP, where are we going, how do we get there? And
those are universal lessons, right?
Those are universal lessons, I believe, yes.
The value of pressing pause, taking a moment to restock, taking some time out from our busy lives in the newsroom and just, you know, evaluating where we need to move forward with.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, look forward to seeing you there, Martina. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Looking forward to it.
So my takeaway for today is this: go back to basics. This is something that unites both Alex and Martina. When confronted with a complex issue or challenge, do not be afraid to return to the fundamentals. How do we get the best out of our journalists, and how do we fulfill the mission we're trying to solve? You'll notice that revenue is not the primary goal from the outset, and neither expects it to be an overnight success. But you do need to plant the seeds now if you are to reap the rewards later on. Now, if you want a deeper and first-hand dive into these strategies, as well as two more sessions from the homes of The Economist and The Financial Times, then grab your place on our study tour while you still can. It's on the 26th of November in London. For more details and to secure your place, head to newsrewired.com. And if you're about the day after, why not stick around in London and come to our NewsRewired conference for a full day of panel sessions and networking over coffee and lunch. You'll save yourself 50 quid as well. NewsRewired is quite honestly one of my favourite times of the year because I get out of my home office and meet our community face to face. We catch up, share what's working and also what's not. It'll be a blast and I'd love to see you there. But that's all we have time for this week. I've been your host, Jacob Granger. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time.